So we had an equation, Laplace on phi equals to minus some source. And then we imposed boundary conditions. So this was in omega. And then we imposed some boundary conditions. We fixed the value of phi at the boundary, so on d omega. And this is called Dirichlet problem. And after working very, very hard, we derived the formula that phi r equals to minus integral g times rho, where this is some kind of Green's function. And this was over omega, so we integrated over the space. Plus we had a boundary term, which was d omega phi dg over dn. Minus g d phi over dn. And this was ds. So this was what I call third Green's identity, and it took us some time actually to derive that. And so first we derive this for so-called free space Green function. So if I put g3 here, then indeed all the terms are there. And it was simply the Green's function which vanished at infinity and which satisfy the Green's function equation Laplace on g equals to minus delta or plus delta. So now you're able to upgrade that by saying, well, we cannot really solve, well, this is not useful formula for anything because we cannot at the same time specify phi and d phi on the boundary. So we can specify this one, that one, or some weird combination of these, but not both of them, not two conditions, yes? I think you would get the same thing, I guess. Yeah.
How can I know that boundary conditions on phi are the equivalent of boundary conditions on the integral of phi? The boundary conditions on the derivative of phi are equivalent to boundary conditions on phi.
I don't really understand the question.
So when I think of applying boundary, so when I look at that second term,
right?
Then I think that I need to integrate it, so end up with an integral of phi, and then apply the boundary condition.
But this is already an integral over the boundary. So it's not like that you are integrating over the whole region and then you are specifying taking the limit of the boundary. This is already an integral over the boundary. So you really need to know what these functions are on the boundary. Right. So, but if we imposed, so let me just write it very simply. So this is always true for any Green's function or plus or minus delta. But then we also require that g at the boundary vanishes, then we wouldn't have this term here. So this term wouldn't be there. And so this was called Dirichlet. Green function. And you would be perfectly happy there. There is yet another problem. So this, of course, should be somehow symmetrical. So I should be able to kill not this term, but that term. I'm telling you that these conditions are basically equal. And that's a different problem. So this is called Dirichlet problem. Which is commonly used. There is another problem which is called Neumann problem. I don't know how many n. Let's put 2. Somebody corrects me. So that's the same thing, Laplace on phi minus rho. But I don't specify the value of the field on the boundary, but I specify its derivative. So I specify d phi over dn equals to something, let's say 0, on d omega. And that's called Neumann problem. And of course, you can go through everything which we went yesterday, you can derive this formula again. But now if I specify, so let's call this G Dirichlet G. Let's now define a different G, Laplace on G Neumann equals to minus delta and dG over dN Neumann on d omega equals to zero. So if I can find such G here, then this term vanishes. So, and I can solve the other problem. So then I wouldn't have that term, I would have that term here, and I will solve the other problem. So these are two basic Green's functions for the Poisson equation. And as I said, you can also consider situations where you actually consider some weird combinations of these boundary conditions. So you can require, for example, I don't want to go into that. Okay, so but these are two basic Green's functions. Questions? Yes? Sorry? You have phi? Phi zero. Well, it's some specifier. So I have my region, let's say two-dimensional region here. This is my omega. This is my d omega, which is just the line surrounding this region. I just specify the values of phi here. So it will be 5, 10 here, minus 30, and so on. So it's, I just specify whatever I, it doesn't have to be constant. It's a function on d omega.
Right.
It doesn't have to be zero. Yeah. But I, at this point, I am just using the simplest thing. Right. Dg over dn. I want that to be zero so that this term vanishes at this point. Let's see. Okay. So I have that. So this vanishes. Right, it can be anything. Yeah. It can be fun. Yeah. Thank you. So, I think it's correct. Whatever. Okay. Any more questions? So that was what we did yesterday. So not now. Let me start a new topic, and that will be Fourier transform. But slightly more generally, let me just introduce a little bit more general concept, which is called integral transform. So integral so you construct a new function. This function of variable k, and this will be an integral from a to b of some function of two variables, k, t, and s, t and k, ft, dt. So I start with some function f. I do something with it, provided that I know what big letter k is, and I obtain a new function f hat, which is function of new variable. So this thing here is called kernel of my integral transform. And it can be basically anything. So I specify my integral transform by specifying what a and b are and what the kernel is. So examples. So now the first example is actually the most complicated one, which you probably haven't seen. But it's nothing else than the Fourier series. So I define the partial sums, so n will be, I'll tend to go with n to infinity in the end, so that this converges to my function f. So I provided I have function f, I define this to be a function of variable k, and then integrals from minus pi to pi ft dn t minus k and dt. And the statement is, okay, so this guy here is called Dirichlet kernel. Should I write it down, or you will find it on the Wikipedia? I can write it down. So, dn equals to 1 over 2 pi sine, big bracket, n plus 1 half, t minus k, divided by sine t minus k over 2. So that's the Dirichlet kernel. Who has seen that before? Very good. Please, somebody. And this is nothing else than actually the integral representation of the Fourier series. So given the function f, I define these partial sums. And if I go with n to infinity, you can show that what is on the right-hand side converges to f if f is nice. So you can show basically, so what you need to show that this guy goes to the delta function if you go with n to infinity. And then obviously this just picks f in k. OK, so that's one example. Much more useful and familiar example is the Laplace transform. And let me just say, a equals to 0, b equals to infinity, so integrate from 0 to infinity, and the kernel k equals to exponential minus kt. So that's the Laplace transform. And that's actually a very, very nice transform because it's very simple. It's one-dimensional. It's used heavily if you want to solve differential equations, ordinary differential equations. That's a very powerful tool to use that. But we shall go to much more complicated transform, which is the Fourier transform. And that's much more complicated thing. So now, define Fourier integral formula. So I define two integrals. So my functions will be from r to power d to, let's say, at this point, the complex numbers fx. So x is d-dimensional thing. E to minus I times x dot k dx, or I'll just say this is f of f evaluated at the point k. Okay, and then the other one is the inverse hat k and 1 over 2 pi to power d. The integral of almost the same thing, but now with plus x dot k dk. And then I will call it f to minus 1 f Okay. Okay, so that's the integral formula. So maybe a few remarks. So this factor 1/2 pi to the power d is basically it's arbitrary where you put it. So some people, well, mathematicians usually choose the symmetric version of this. So they put 1/2 pi to d½ here and 1/2 pi to d½ there. And it's completely symmetric, these formulas. And it has very nice properties. Physicists somehow tend to use this guy, but it doesn't matter. So you simply have to have 2 pi somewhere, but it doesn't matter where you put it.
Is the argument F inverse X?
Sure. Thank you. Right? So that was the first remark. Second remark, I write this X dot K, which is the scalar product. X dot k, or in Anna's course, you put xk or you put xk. So that's the scalar product of two vectors. So today, we will have that this positive definite. So today, you'll just take the simplest thing, x1, k1, plus x2, k2, and so on. Tomorrow, we will use the Lorentzian signature. So we will use, so there'll be minus here. And then the other ones will be plus. So it can be any scalar product, basically. And on Thursday, we will use even weirder. We will use light cone scalar product. So this is basically any scalar product can stand here. And it's still valid. It's still nice. OK. Good. So now you are experts in Gaussian integration. So let me do an example on Gaussian integration. Example. So I'm interested what f. So I'm in d dimensions now of the function e to x square over 2. So taking this function e to x square, so x1 square plus x2 square plus x3 square, square and so on, what is the Fourier transform? OK, so using the first definition, it's an integral to d. E to minus x square over 2 minus I k dot x dx. Okay, anybody knows the result immediately? Okay, you had the whole course. Okay, so let me start. So this is Gaussian integration. Integration, which is the only one physicists actually can do. Okay, so let me start with something simple. So do you remember what is the integral from minus infinity to infinity e to minus a x square? Huh? Square root of? Perfect. Square root of pi over a. So now, what if I have an integral from minus infinity to infinity e to minus a x square minus bx? So what do I have to do? OK, yeah. So you are giving me the result. Very good. So I need to complete the squares, which will pick me another term, which will, in the end, be in front of that. So this guy is pi over a e to b square over 4a. Everybody happy? Good. So now I have D of these integrals of this type. So this is of one variable in one dimension. This one is in D dimensions. So for each, so I have dx1, dx2, dx3, and so on. So I have D of them, the integrals. And this integral there becomes this integral if I choose A equal to one half and B? IK. Perfect. All right. So why do I get 2 from 1 half? So it's, the result is 2 pi over d half e to k square over 2. Hopefully. So you see something very, very nice about the exponential. If I start with the exponential, perform the Fourier transformation, I end up with the exponential. The stupid factor here is precisely because of the second definition. If I chose the symmetric version, this factor wouldn't be there. And I would have that Fourier transform of exponential is exponential, the same exponential. So that's very, very nice function, this one. And you'll see that it plays a fundamental role when we will be trying to solve the diffusion equation. Okay, so let me just note that if you do the inverse on this guy, so f minus 1, now I use the other formula there of e to minus k square over 2 pi d half at the value of x, then do the same Gaussian integration again, but now with this different sign, you get back that you have e to x square over 2. So what does it mean? It means that it looks like that these two integrals are inversions. That's really, the other formula is an inversion to the first formula. It takes many, many pages, many, many theorems to prove that it is actually the case in general. So I just give you an example that it may be so. But indeed, these two things are, if everything is nice and you have many, many conditions satisfied, it is true. OK, last remark. If you look at both these formulas, then you may be interested for which functions these formulas work. And so because the exponential I to something is limited by 1, so it's always the magnitude is always more than 1, it seems that these formulas would work for integrable functions. Whenever the integral of fx is finite, these formulas work. So in other words, these integral formulas work for f to be L1 functions. But L1 functions are not nice. In particular, what happens is that if you start with any L1 function, the Fourier transform of it may go beyond L1. So L1 is not closed, it's very bad space. So that's why I'll choose to have L1 and L2 functions. And in that case, everything can be fine. And basically, again, mathematicians are very much interested how to define the Fourier transform for L2 functions. And you can do that. It's, again, a complicated procedure. But these integral formulas are not valid anymore. You have to do some limits and so on to define for any L2 function. Yes?
Can you recapitulate what we mean by L1 and L2?
L1, it means that the integral of f is finite. And L2, it means that the integral of f squared is finite. So just a remark. So Fourier transform is not only these formulas. You can define it to much broader class of functions. But you need to use, you don't have a formula for that. You take the limits of series and so on.
Shouldn't there be a modulus?
Yeah. There should be a modulus. Thank you. Very good. So now I gave you yesterday the handouts. Everybody has them. And then good. So these are the basic properties of the functions. In the formulas I gave you yesterday, there were many mistakes. I received a few emails correcting my mistakes. So hopefully now it's slightly better. Okay, so now I'll assume that two functions really belong to these L1 and L2 spaces. So they are nice functions. So then you can show that the Fourier transform is continuous function. It's a nice function. You can show that if you take the limit k goes to infinity, actually the Fourier transform vanishes. So if I really start this this function, which doesn't have to vanish at infinity. Well, it doesn't have to vanish because of this condition. But I can show that. It's called Riemann-Lebesgue lemma. Then there's this very nice convolution property. Who has seen convolution? Everybody. Who hasn't seen convolution? One person. So you have the definition in the notes. Should I give a physical example where you actually have to solve the convolution equation in the tutorial? Who wants a physical example? One person. Who doesn't want a physical example? One person is not enough. Okay, think about it. You'll tell me at the end. Okay, so convolution, basically it's an integral of f and g where you integrate, at point x is an integral f x minus y gy dy, and you integrate over the whole space. And that's actually a very useful property, very useful operation. And then you can show that if you have Fourier transform of that, it's just a product of these things. So again, it behaves very nicely. Okay. So I think there is a typo there. I have function h there in the nodes. Should be function f, of course. Then there is this shift property. So if I define the shift to be basically shifting x by a, then the Fourier transform just picks up this factor here, e to ka. And this is very useful if you want to solve difference equations, not differential equations, but difference equations. And you will have an example on that in tutorial. So that's a very nice property. Then you have scale. If I scale by some number, the argument, I pick up that factor here. What is very nice about Fourier transform and why it is used for solving differential equations is that basically it turns derivatives into algebraic operations. So any derivative is turned into a multiplication by k. And vice versa, so if I have multiplication, then the final is derivative. So this is mostly used if you are solving partial differential equations. And there's this Parseval equality, which is something really, really wonderful. I think the factor, so again, in the notes is 2 pi to power d. I think the correct one is 1 over 2 pi. Anybody checked? Nobody checked? So basically, it's telling you that the norm of the function, of the original function, is the same as the norm or the magnitude of the Fourier transform function. The same thing. And finally, a very, very difficult thing to prove, many, many pages, many, many theorems, that f and f1, f to minus 1 are inversions, if they exist. All right. Questions to these? Should I prove any of these? Do you want to prove me any of these? Which one? This one? No, which one? Okay, no proofs. Okay. So maybe it would be more interesting to have a look at the applications of these. So why don't I put this up? And so some of them are very easy to prove, provided that we are in physics, that we can exchange the limit and integration. You can you know, so some of them are very easy to prove. So an example how to use this, and this will be a relatively complicated example, but I'll show you the general solution of the free space diffusion equation, which is something really, really fancy. So example, solve. The Cauchy, that's called Cauchy problem. Cauchy. I'll explain what it is for the diffusion equation. So diffusion equation is one of the most fundamental equations in mathematical physics. So I have function u, which is function of x and t, and I have one time derivative of u minus Laplace on u equals to some right-hand side. So this will be, I'll be solving that on the interval. So t, time goes from 0 to t, and x, and this will be free space. So as we had the free space green function for the Poisson equation, I'll be solving this equation again in the free space. I don't have any boundary conditions. I don't keep a heat radiator here at this point. OK, so r. T, and that's x thing. But you impose the condition that at time equal to 0, initial condition, this is some function u0 of x. Right. So how to proceed? So because it's an example on Fourier transformation, we want to Fourier transform that, right? So we will Fourier transform in x. So we keep time untouched. We will Fourier transform in x coordinates. Right? So Fourier transform in x. So nothing happens with the first term because I just keep. But now I understand u. So now u hat is function of t and k, not t and x. Right? So now I have to Fourier transform this guy. Mm-hmm. So this is just, well, d square over dx square plus d square over dy square and so on. So it has two derivatives inside. So which means that if I Fourier transform and use the property 6, then for each of the derivatives, I pick ik, right? So I pick them twice because I have two derivatives. So I will have ik square. So I square is minus 1. So that's why this minus changes to plus. I have plus k square u equals to f hat. So I use the property 6 here. Everybody happy so far? Okay. So I need to know whether you know this or not. So do you know, so if you look at this equation for u hat, it's nothing than just a ordinary linear differential equation of the first order with the right-hand side. So you know how to solve that. So I really like the method of integration factor But there is very many other approaches. So you can use Laplace transform, you can use variation of variables and so on, variation of constants method. But I really like that. So let me just say a few words about this. So method of integration factor. Was it repeated by Dan or not really in his lectures on differential equations? Method of integration factor. Did he do that? Okay, so then it's useful. Integration factor. So imagine I have dy over d tau plus ay equal to b, where a and b can be functions of tau. Okay, so what do I do with that? I simply multiply the equation by e to a tau. Okay, so on the right hand side, I have b times e to a tau. And now on the left hand side, I claim I have d over d tau y e to a tau. So let's have a look. So I'm using the Leibniz rule or the product rule if you want. So the first, I differentiate this guy, it gives me dy over d tau times e to a tau, that's fine. I differentiate that guy, which gives me a down, I'm differentiating the exponential, which gives me a down, so y a y. So we agree, it's that. Right, so that's the whole trick, so just multiply by that. So now, of course, you can integrate this. So now let me integrate the equation from 0 to t d tau. Okay, so on the left-hand side, it's simple because I have total derivative, so it just picks the values. So it will be first evaluated at t, this thing here. So it's y of t e to a t minus, now at 0, which is y at 0, e to a times 0, which is 1, which is, okay. So that's the left-hand side. And the right-hand side is simply just this integral. 0 to t d tau b, let me put tau explicitly, e to a tau. All right, so from here, I can read what y is, right? So y of t is y at 0 times e to minus a t plus an integral from 0 to t d tau b tau e to a tau minus t, hopefully. Let me check. T. I'm getting different sign. Hopefully it's correct. T minus tau. T. Yt minus, is the sign correct here? I'm interested in this sign. Should it be like that? Or? Hopefully it's fine. Okay, so that's the method of integration factor. Basically, staring at my equation, I just find what I have to multiply with so that on the left-hand side, I get the total derivative. And it works much more generally, so I don't have to have, it works more generally. Who has seen that? Everybody, very good. Okay, so let me now apply this to this equation here. So I can write down the solution of this equation. So u hat t and k equals to u0 of k e to minus k square times t. I'm destroying the chalk all the time. Plus an integral 0 to t f tau and k e to minus k square. Do I have the wrong sign there? I have the wrong sign there. Somehow it must be t minus tau. Find the mistake for me, please. T minus tau d tau. OK, I just applied the formula there for solving this equation here. OK, so that looks good, except that everything here is Fourier transform. So this guy is Fourier transform. This guy is Fourier transform. This guy is Fourier transform. So far, it seems that we will have to do a very complicated inversion of the Fourier transform. So we just solved t dependence, but then you have to go back. But actually, it turns out that if you use the trick, which is this Gaussian integration I showed you before, we don't have to do that. So now we know that e to k square over 2 equals to 1 over 2 pi to d half e to minus x square over 2 Fourier transformed. I derived that for you. Well, which is almost what we want. We want the Fourier transformation of k square times t, not of k square over 2, but of k square times t. So we can use the property 5. So basically, we know k square over 2, but so we can specify a in the scale property 5 so that we get k square times t. Okay. So using 5 and saying that a equals to 1 over 2 times t, then that formula reads e to minus k square times t equals to 1 over 2 t d half e to minus x square over 4 t Fourier transformed. And then you pick up another factor, 1 over 2, which was still there, 2 pi over d half. So that's just scaling that thing. If you don't believe that, you can try to derive it again using the Gaussian integration, but why not to use property 5? Okay, definition. G tx to t to d over 2 e to minus x square over 4t. So it is an exponential. I told you that exponential is very special for Fourier transform. So this is a special exponential which has t there and it sits here. And that's called heat kernel. And it's a function which plays a very special role for the diffusion equation, heat kernel. Maybe you did a tutorial with Dan on this, right? Right, good. OK, so we are almost there. So we have that equation over there. So now we can actually write it. So what do we know is that we can write this exponential to k square T as a Fourier transform of heat kernel. We know that, because that's what I showed you here. So basically, then you have U hat equals to U0 hat times e to k squared, but I can write it as a Fourier transform of the heat kernel. So I have product of two heat kernels, which are in heat kernel and U0, which are in Fourier transform, right? So, but looking at the property number three of the convolution, if I have product of two Fourier transforms, it's actually a convolution between these two things, right? Okay, so I just write down this equation as u hat t of k equals to, let me just take the factor 1 over 2 pi d over 2. So then I have u0 convolution with the heat kernel, with g, and the whole thing Fourier transformed. And this is in k and t as the first term. And the other term is precisely the same thing, right? So then it's 0 to t. And then I have f tau something convolution with the heat kernel again, because it's the same exponential there, t minus tau k Fourier transform and d tau. Yes? What? This guy here. Well, it should be like, so this g depends on x. So I don't write x. X, if you want x, and then you integrate over x, so that in the end it's function of k. So this f is function of t and x. You integrate over x, but there's no x in the end, because this convolution kills the x and makes it a function of k. So who is still happy with this? Yeah, almost done. Who is not happy? Okay, so we are almost done. So now look at that beautiful thing. So on the left-hand side, we have something completely beneath the hat. On the right-hand side, this is a constant. It doesn't care about the transformation. So this guy is beneath the hat. And that guy is beneath the hat completely. So what if I forget about hats? So I just delete hats on both sides. I have a solution, right? So, looking beneath hats, I read the solution. So now I'll write down what the convolution means explicitly. Okay. So u t of x. So I'm just returning back. So instead of k, I'll write x. And I will forget about hats. So u t of x is 1 over 2 pi d half. So now let me just write down explicitly what g is and what the convolution is. So g is this exponential e to x squared over 4t. So it's, and the convolution is an integral over rd. So let me write it down and it will be simple. X minus y squared over 4t divided by 2t t half u0 of y d of y. That's convolution of g and u0. And then the other integral is 0 to t. The convolution, which is r to d integral of the kernel for t minus tau to t minus tau d half f tau y dy d tau. So that's the most general solution of the free space diffusion equation. And that's the one which you started with in Dan's tutorial, I guess. So I really like this calculation because first it uses all the properties of the Fourier transform. So you see them in practice. And it's relatively very simple. You don't have to do basically any integrals except this Gaussian integration. And you don't have to do the inversion. Usually, you'll see examples where we will have to do actually the explicit integration to get the inversion formula back or whatever. But here, we just use all these convolution things. And that's the general solution of the thing. Yes? Sorry, how do you recognize that this one is?
This particular problem is one to which we should apply Fourier transform.
Okay, very good. it's a differential equation, so it's always good to try Fourier transform on any differential equation if you can solve it. Because that's what is nice about Fourier transform. It changes derivatives to just an algebraic operation. But it turned out that even if you do that, you will not be able to actually return back. So you can easily solve it in the k-space, where it's just an algebraic operation. But you may not be able to return back to the x-space, because you will not be able to do the integral. Yeah. But you know, it took generations of mathematicians to derive that, right? So it's not something you would do in the afternoon and be happy. OK. So that was a fancy example, very complicated one, but also very important and very. So now I don't know how much time I have. Okay, let me switch gears here and do something which will be familiar to most of you, but for some who are not familiar with the formalism, it will be completely strange and completely understandable. So. If you don't understand that, don't worry. You will see that again in the first course on quantum mechanics. I'll just show you how physicists are very weird. So Fourier transform in quantum mechanics. So you already know already from Anna that you describe state by vector. So I'll be using quantum mechanics notation. So you describe state by psi. And then specifically, I can consider eigenstates. So who hasn't taken any course in quantum mechanics? Everybody has taken something. OK, eigenstates of operators x and p. So you denote operators by these hats, these funny hats. So and then this is really perverse, but physics is like that. So you have x operator acting on its eigenstate x. Gives you the eigenvalue x acting on that state x. So you have, so you compose everything into one letter. Well, this is operator, this is eigenstate, and this is the eigenvalue. And the same way, you have p hat acting on the eigenstate p equals to the eigenvalue p and p. So now, these states are very special because they form an orthogonal basis, orthonormal basis, form a complete So if you exactly know the position of the particle, you know everything you can know. If you exactly know the momentum of the particle, you know exactly everything there is to know. Complete orthogonal basis. So what does it mean? Is that one, which is everything there is just the sum over the eigenstates, which are tensor product. Okay, but of course you know that unless there's some boundary conditions, this is actually these eigenstates are very dense, so they are continuous. There's no like quantization of the distance. So that's why this becomes, in fact, an integral. It's the same thing of dx. But formally, you can write the sum. Doesn't matter. Similarly, this is true for p. Sum over p. And here comes the screw thing. And there's this factor 2 pi over the okay. So that simply means that you have complete orthogonal basis, basically. And why do I say orthogonal? Because x, the scalar product of x and x prime would be like delta x and x prime. But because this is continuous, it's a delta function, delta x minus x prime. And the same for p, which I will not write down. OK. So this is the language of quantum mechanics. And again, if you are not familiar with this language, don't worry. If you just seen a wave function psi of x, then you will learn this very quickly in quantum course. OK. So where is my psi of x? So let's say that I am in state psi, but I want to express it in so-called x representation. Psi in x representation. And that's what it precisely means by the wave function. So wave function is nothing else than the scalar product of x and the state psi. So this is the eigenvector of the x operator. This is the state psi. So that's what wave function is. OK. So now I can find the matrix elements of my operator x hat. So let's do that. And so I'll be interested in how the matrix looks like in the basis x and in the state psi. So this is my x operator. And I just sandwich it by psi and x. OK. And then again, very, very weird notation. Even weirder than what we seen before. So this is an operator x in x representation. OK. X and psi. So how do I know that? I know that x, when x acts on the eigenstate x, it just gives me the value x. But it also gives me the operator in the x representation. OK, so this guy is operator x hat in x representation. And on the other hand, this just gives me x and psi of x. That gives me x psi of x. Well, this is the eigenvalue. So we see that the operator, so okay, so this is also psi of x. So the operator x hat in the x representation acts like a multiplication by x. So this operator x hat in x representation acts like a multiplication by x. Okay, so we are almost there. So there is one fundament of quantum mechanics, and that's the uncertainty relations. So I want to satisfy x p commutation relation equals to I h bar is 1. So okay, so I want to satisfy the commutation relations here. So now I'll be interested in the matrix element of the operator P. So of the same matrix element of the operator P, like that. So that, by definition, gives me the P operator in the X representation, X and psi. And then I need to satisfy these relations here. So I have to think about what this guy can be. And there is a unique solution given by Neumann. And that's that actually this guy must act as a derivative. So minus I d over dx. And this guy is just psi of x. So the operator P in the X representation acts like a derivative. The operator X in the X representation acts like a multiplication. So PX acts like a derivative. And the necessary input here is these commutation relations. And again, it's a non-trivial problem to solve. So that I want to satisfy xp equals to I, and what this can be. And he proved that it must be this thing here. Okay. So, control question. How does the operator P act in the P representation? So I show you how it acts in the X representation, meaning that I'm multiplying here by X. What if I multiply here by P? If I replace X by P? Exactly. So then it will be multiplication because P acting on P is by the defined equation P. So operator P in the P representation acts like a multiplication by P. How would operator X look like in the P representation? It would be a derivative with respect to P, except the minus sign. So it would be d over dp. Very good. Very good. Okay, so what you just said is that if I take x, p hat, now I specify my state psi to be p again. So you know that this is p, what you told me, p, x and p. It's a multiplication by p. is the same as the operator P. Now I can choose which representation I want, whether I want to act on left or on right, so let me choose left. So P and X, X and P, I know that P in X is the derivative, so it's minus I d over dx, X and P. Okay, staying here and there. Yes?
Sorry, why are you using X and P and not P and psi?
Why X and P are not?
Like before you were using X and psi, P and
psi. Yeah, yeah, okay. So now I'm applying this formula here to psi equal to P. So psi equal to P. Good question, thank you. I'm just specifying what I derived before, but now for psi equal to P. So looking at here and at there, I see that I have an equation, differential equation, for this guy here, for the product X and P. Right? I have P, and then I have... that thing, which tells me, if I solve that equation, it's very simple to solve, that X and P equals to E to I P times X. So, P representation So wave function I called the product of X and psi, psi of X. But I can also have psi of P, which will be P and psi. So psi of P, so this is a wave function in the P representation, which is P and psi. Now I use the fact that I have orthonormal complete basis. So I just sum over X, P, put there X, put there X. So this guy is 1. So I haven't done anything else, anything bad. So this guy is 1, P and X, and psi. Right? So I know that this sum is, in fact, actually an integral. Right? So it's an integral. But I know what this guy is, because I derived it here. So this is nothing else than psi of X, which is the wave function in the X representation, times E to I P times X. So you see that the P representation, which is on the left-hand side, is connected to the X representation on the right-hand side by this integral here, px. And x and p, very good. Very good. Yeah, thank you. Yes. So p and x representations are connected. Connected by this integral, but this integral is nothing else than the Fourier transformation by Fourier transform. And basically, this is all there is to know about both quantum mechanics. Nothing else. Right? So, what was the physical input there? It's really, I postulated these commutation relations, and the rest basically is just the algebra. So I need to have that input, which gives me this important relation here. It's Neumann derived. It's the only solution there. But after I have that, everything is just the algebra. So if you haven't seen this notation before, don't worry. You will see it many times more. And I have 3 minutes, which is great. So last tiny but very important thing is the Fourier transformation of delta function. So I assume F is nice, as always. So I have F of x. OK, do I still have? I don't have. So I'll use f, the integral formula for f, and the integral formula for f minus 1. And I'll combine them together. Okay, so first, this is 1 over 2 pi, 2 power d, integral r to power d, dk, e to I, k times x, f hat of k. So that's my inverse. So if f is nice and f and f minus 1 are indeed inverse transformations, then this must be true. But do I write something? Maybe not. inverse is plus, and yeah, like that. Okay, so this guy now is an integral over RD f of y e to minus I k times y dy. Hopefully. Okay. So what do I get? It's 1 over 2 pi 2 power d. And now let me collect the terms. So of course, I'm a physicist. So I can switch the integrals. I can do whatever I want. So let me put the integral over y first, f of y, and then, OK. Maybe like that. It's our 2 pi d here. So let me put it like that. And then put 1 over 2 pi to power d rd e to I k times x minus y dk. So I haven't done anything. I just switch the integrals. OK, and so let me ask how that is possible. So I have fx on the left-hand side. And then I have integral over y, f of y, times something. So how that is possible is the only conclusion here is that this guy here must be the delta function x minus y. So this must be delta x minus y. So we have a formula. Which is very important formula. Delta x minus y equals to 1 over 2 pi to d integral r of d e to I k x minus y dk. OK, so that's the Fourier transformation representation or integral representation of the delta function. And just note this nothing else, then if you like the notation before, the quantum mechanics notation, then if you have product of two eigenstates x and y, you know that they are orthonormal, delta x minus y, which is the sum. Now I'm inserting p, the unity in terms of p. Right? This is just one. But this guy is xp I derived there is e to I p times x. This one is e to minus I p times y. And the sum over the p has that funny factor 1 over 2 pi d. So this is 1 over 2 pi d. If I want to write it as an integral, it's r to the d e pi times x minus y dp, which is the same formula as here. So see how effective this notation is. This is really one line derivation. OK. Let me finish here. Questions? Any questions? Do you have a question?
Say Fourier transform of the Green's function of the system convoluted with some input function.
Sorry, is the Fourier transform of the Green's function? Right.
The general solution for any input.
Yeah, yeah. It is the same thing. Yeah. Okay. It is the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see that a little bit on Thursday, but not much. Not much. Yeah. It is the same thing. Basically. It's like an evolution operator, let's say, or it's almost the same thing. So you have this spectral function, you have evolution operator, you have Green's function, all these things are very, very connected. Yeah. Other questions? No questions. Good.